I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry, from the video games world, every couple of weeks.
It is not the Adam Sandler film. I'm devastated.
I managed to get you on the show by pretending that you would be with a much more famous person than I am.
Kevin James.
I am only Patrick Beja, but you are the world famous Mark Turpin, also known as Derpster. How's it going, sir?
It's going very well, thank you, Patrick. It's we're recording this at the crack of noon, it's nice. It's a good day.
For me, it's almost 1 p.m. and I'm starving.
Really? You haven't eaten?
I haven't eaten yet.
We're going to do a very quick show.
No. Let's not discuss my lunch. Video games instead.
Okay. For me, they're one and the same. I consume both of them in dangerous quantities.
I understand that.
And I don't understand my own limits. So I very much am just...
That explains your recent weight gains.
Thank you. I blame it on having a small child. But the truth is that...
You know, so you have two now. Asleep. Do you even have time to play video games?
Oh, Patrick, this is the best thing. And you're going to discover this. Small babies are the most boring thing you will ever encounter in your life. Okay? In that... They don't really do anything. And literally, like, one of the big milestones that you get excited about is them being able to hold their head up straight. Like, you're like, oh, my, look, she can move her head. You know, and it's like, okay. You know, you don't tend to get excited with any other person you meet when they move their head.
When they move their head, that's true.
But for kids, you know, you got to put the excitement level is there. And so they cry, they feed, they poop, and they sleep. And they sleep for, like... 15 hours, 16 hours a day. Sort of, they spend most of the time sleeping.
That sounds good, but then you have to take care of them for 8 hours.
But they're sleeping on you. At least that's how mine have always liked. Some people are lucky and they can put them down. But my kids, they like to fall asleep on me. So I'll be there
hours
on the sofa.
Remaining out of 24, what do you do for those eight hours?
They can't play video games. So that's normally with the mama.
Okay.
Changing nappies. I'm a dab hand at that. That doesn't take me long. Mm-hmm. I'm a master.
Excellent.
And then you're doing a bit of interaction and play. It's all good. But like I said, you've got that sleep is throughout the day. So it's all the time.
All right.
And so you can get some solid quality hours of gaming in, assuming it's either a mobile game or a console game. You cannot PC game, in my experience, with a child on you, at least with any form of...
Unless you have some sort of strange contraption where you're lying down with the screens on top, like on the falling down from the ceiling or something. That could
Or, you know, like when you're on the phone with someone and you just use your shoulder to kind of hold it to your ear. So it could be, you could maybe do that with a child
that
as well.
That could work.
My experience, I found that I'm playing more console games now than before.
Which is why we are going to be able to talk about Super Mario Odyssey. We're going to talk about Assassin's Creed. We didn't play Wolfenstein 2.
I haven't had a chance to play that. And that's the thing is, you do have to be mindful about what you're playing in front of these small children.
Right. Although I guess, you know,
Super Baby, you ain't got to worry about.
Yeah,
but
it's
when
fine.
I've got a toddler as well. She's going to be 3 in January. And she does... You know, she does watch the screen if I'm playing it, so I have to be mindful.
So 3, she would be like, "Daddy, why is the pregnant lady stabbing Nazis?"
And you, yeah, be probably like, exactly.
Because Nazis are bad people,
and I say exactly, they deserve it.
Yeah,
they didn't clean their bedroom. That's why. Have you cleaned your bedroom? Well, you
we're
better get
also,
to it.
Also going to be talking about the Star Wars Battlefront 2 pay-to-win loot box controversy, which has been blowing up in the past couple of days. Paris Games Week, we have a lot of things to discuss from the past, like, 2 to 3 weeks, because we were, I mean, I was at BlizzCon, and it was super busy, and we had the BlizzCon episode, so we have a lot of things that we didn't get a chance to discuss, including the Sony conference from Paris Games Week. The Xbox One X is available, so, you know what? Let's just get started. Let's start with Mario, which is an excellent game. So for people who don't know how the Super Mario Odyssey works, I'm going to go over very quickly the core of the game. Basically, you have different kingdoms, which are essentially maps that you have to go through in a somewhat guided way for the first time around. You go through it. There is a problem you have to solve in that map. Some monster has done something that upsets the inhabitants. You solve that issue. It takes about, I would say, half an hour per map. And you can then move on to another map. And you move on until you've completed all of the kingdoms. And then you can go back and collect lots and lots of additional moons, which is what you need to power your vessel, which takes you to the different kingdoms. And there are a lot of moons, and there's a lot of stuff
than you
to
need,
do.
Actually, which I like. Yeah. It's not like Korok seeds or something like that in Zelda. Even then, actually saying that, maybe there were more of those than you needed. But anyway, you don't need to collect all of them to unlock everything, which is great.
So each moon collection is basically a tiny activity. Sometimes it's a puzzle-like thing. Sometimes it's a platforming thing. Sometimes it's just there. You just jump and you get it.
Oh, that was a tough one.
And the core gameplay mechanic of that game is, of course, it's a 3D Mario game. So in the style of Super Mario 64, Sunshine, Galaxy, and Galaxy 2. And this is the next one. And of course, you've seen this, I'm certain. Mario can throw his hat, his little cappy companion, which turns into his hat. And when you do that, it helps with different moves, new moves that you have. And also, it can capture enemies, which give you an entirely different moveset. And you can capture, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 different enemies, and they are in different parts of the world with different things that they allow you to do. Which
you can capture a tree. You can capture a tree.
I didn't see the tree. Maybe a stump.
Yeah, you can be a tree. But you can be the Christmas tree.
Ah, okay. I will have to go try that out.
Spoilers. You're a tree, but
So what do you think of the game? Like, what you played it a lot. What's your impression?
It's a magical sort of joyous, just it feels super authentically fun. Like there's nothing, like it's not getting enjoyment through shock or through gratuitous violence or anything like that. You know, it's, everything is cool and wonderful and magical. And I think magical is kind of the closest way to describe this game, in that it just feels innocent and fun and just endless in its possibilities. I love it, in terms of, especially for the console it's on, to be able to play that out and about.
It works really well on both settings, like if you're outside or if you're on the... I took it to BlizzCon, so I played it a lot on the plane, and now I've been playing it at home, and I can't stop getting more moons. Like I've been playing Assassin's Creed a little bit, and I enjoy that, but I'm always like, I need more moons. And the thing you said is how I've been describing it. The joy is, for me, the most characteristic, the most important characteristic of that game. The joy it provides you. You know, I'm not really one for nostalgia. Like,
I think I'm not now as much of a fan of nostalgia as I was. I think I used to, I look back on my nostalgia and I think I was more nostalgic in the past.
That is very funny. but I'm not really a big, you know, like, oh, when we were kids, like this makes me feel like I was when I was a kid, because when I was, I don't have many memories of when I was a child, and when I was a teenager, I was awkward and not very well adjusted, and like I don't like have a fondness for that period, so I don't have this childlike wonderment fantasy. But with this game, it's the closest I've ever been to feeling, having the sentiment that this is what it feels like to be happy when you're a child. You know, every new enemy that you capture, it's this wonderful experience of, oh, this thing can do that, and in that world I can do this, and it's like you giggle inside and outside, and you're doing the thing that enemy does, that new, it's almost like a Mario costume from the other games, except you have like 50 and they're a little bit more simple. And you get into that enemy, and you some of them, especially, you know, the little octopus that makes you fly, and the little caterpillar, and like they're just,
this goes up.
They're just happiness in a controller, you know, and everything in the design of the game is happy. The little sounds, the little animations, like that's always been the case with Mario, but with this one it seems they've gone overboard. And like even the thing, like everything you capture, first of all, they all have a hat, and that's even that, the design of that is just makes you smile. And then when you capture them, Mario inhabits their body, so of course they have a little mustache. So you have, like, if you inhabit a if you capture a bullet, then the bullet is going to have a mustache. If you capture a fireball, the fireball is going to have a mustache. It's the most mundane thing, but it participates in that package of happiness, you know. And it's, I wouldn't say it's as important gaming-wise as Zelda has been in the beginning of the year, maybe. I think that was a little bit more groundbreaking in the game design. But I think this one is going to be a game that people remember for a very long time. It's a very memorable experience. It's certainly one of the best, possibly the best 3D Mario game that has ever been created. Yep. And the way they shower you with... you know, some people are saying, well, the moons are too easy to get, blah, blah, blah. Some of them are very easy to get, but all of them are an opportunity for you to experience something a little bit different and a little bit more, or not more, but like a different kind of joyful gaming moment.
It rewards you for experimenting, which I love. And it feels like there aren't really wrong answers in this game, really nice. It feels rewarding, it feels accessible, and yet it challenges you regardless of your skill level. It's just a very, very, very well-made game. It doesn't reinvent gaming, but it feels like it perfects gaming in, you know, for the genres that we're kind of in. I love it. I honestly think it's one of those games that I don't think I will necessarily grow tired of. I might 100% it, but I don't think I'd ever find spending time in it not fun. So yeah, I couldn't give it a higher praise for what it is. Ultimately, if you don't like platforming, you probably won't enjoy the game. But
yeah, it's still very much a Mario game. Like you spend, I was a little bit afraid of that you wouldn't spend, like you would spend too much time playing enemies, but it's still 80% Mario, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. And it's, I just think it's just a fantastic experience that if you have a Switch, you're going to get it. If you don't have a Switch, Christmas is coming up. You know, maybe you've been good this year. It's truly a magical experience.
Yeah.
I love it.
I would say the gameplay is incredibly deep. Some of the things that people have been able to do with that Mario hat throw and jumping on it and catching it, and then like it's you don't suspect that it's that deep if you haven't seen those. And it's just, unless you hate Mario and Zelda, then you should probably be thinking of getting a Switch fairly soon, because they're going to be out of stock for this holiday season. And you probably want to play that game. I mean, there are so many games, of course, that you're going to be having other things to play. But yeah, that is definitely a recommend for me, and I think for most people who have played it. And Nintendo is looking at this and thinking, we're going to sell a lot of consoles. They've revised their forecast for the Switch from 10 million to 14 million. I believe Terpser is typing on Googling stuff to make sure I'm not saying something dumb.
No, you're on point. 14
right,
million.
Cool. 14 million units, and they're planning to manufacture, depending on how well it goes in the beginning of next year, but for next calendar fiscal year, which starts in April, apparently they're going to manufacture between 25 and 30 million consoles. Which is insane.
That's a lot of consoles.
Yeah.
That's some steep growth.
Like
I said, it's solid, solid gameplay on there. There's some other great titles on the Switch, and it is, you know, shaping up. You know, we're getting Skyrim again this week.
Yeah, that's not the one I would say is motivating people.
But we'll see what comes of it. But I don't think people will have too much buyer's remorse when it comes around to the Switch.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to not like the console, and the great asset of that console is that you're going to be playing it at home and when you're moving around. So
if I could get Joy-Cons that would plug into an iPhone and I could use that, I think that would probably win for me in terms of having just a device in my pocket plus some accessories. That's the only downside of the Switch, is that it hasn't replaced my phone. So I've got two things I need to carry,
I suppose. And it's also a little bit bigger than a phone. Well, quite a bit bigger. I think we're going to be seeing hardware revisions starting in 2019, maybe 2020. And there's going to be a smaller version of it. There's going to be a different things, I'm guessing. But in other Nintendo news, Animal Crossing is coming to mobile, and that's going to be called Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. I'm not a big Animal Crossing fan, so I'm not super
one, but I'll be honest with you. It's one of those games that I know would suck
people
me
love,
in
but,
too much. I know I would play far too much of it for and still not really be enjoying it as much as I should.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is coming this December, I believe. So there's another game for those who love Japanese role-playing games. And Capcom mentioned that they have missed the boat on the Switch. Namco, I think, said something similar. Basically, everyone is looking at this and saying, all right, we're going to get to it now. The success of the hardware is prompting developers to get their teams to work on games. And the first one they have had a couple of small games on the Switch, but Capcom has announced they're going to be making an Ace Attorney for the Switch, which makes sense.
Nice.
So the future is bright for Nintendo with their Switch, which I think I'm saying this every time I'm talking about them, but I wouldn't have bet on at the beginning of the year, but I couldn't be happier that they are finding success and that they're delighting gamers with their console and games.
Too right. Too right.
Assassin's Creed Origins So I'm not going to say what I think, although I might have it at the beginning of the show. Assassin's Creed
say?
Was what I think. Yes, please.
Yeah.
So the thing to remember is Assassin's Creed, of course, long running series. They took a year off last year, so a lot of people were hoping that this year's game would be reinventing the formula, kind of. And I was a little bit disappointed to realize that they didn't. It's very much an Assassin's Creed game set in Egypt, of course. But before I say what I think, Terpster, what do you think of that?
So. Game? For me, I haven't enjoyed an assassin since Ezio. Like, all the assassins since Ezio, I've not cared about. You know, Connor, all right, mate, whatever. Go have fun with yourself. Bayek, Is the first assassin. Like, again, beginning of the game, I thought, really? Ugh. And, like, some of the animations are super kind of flinchy and twitchy. Like, they're trying to have subtle nuances, but it just kind of is that Uncanny Valley-style weirdness. But...
How far along are you in the game?
I completed it.
Oh, so, you finished it. Okay.
Yeah, once you kind of get into the first 2-3 hours of the game, Bayek really grows on you. As a character, and you start understanding his motivations, and he has personality, and he's relatable, and he is actually fantastically voice acted, which can't be said for 99% of the side quest characters, of which all the side quests are basically the same, in that you have some impoverished Egyptian complaining about something. Normally it's like tax. And they're like, oh, we're getting taxed a lot. And Bayek's like, all right, I'll see what I can do. AKA, the Magi is going to go kill someone. So it's like, you know, oh, no, someone's taken my dog. Oh, don't worry, I'll go get your dog back for you. How am I going to get the dog back? Well, I'll go kill the guy who took the dog. you know, it's just every single thing is, I mean, I know it's assassins, okay, we're assassins.
Right, it's not Negotiator's Creed.
No, exactly,
you know, it's
exactly.
Assassin's Creed. That's what
However,
they do.
Everything is resulted by, well, I'm going to go kill someone to go do it. There's a billion side quests, and the actual main quest, excusing the need to level up in between, is probably about 4-5 hours worth of story content.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, I'd say so. If you bake it down, like if you go on a YouTube and just watch the story cinematics, so didn't actually do the missions, I'd say you're probably talking about kind of 3 hours. So maybe it's closer to sort of 9 hours or something like that.
Okay,
but
yeah, that sounds more acceptable.
The rest of it, I've played, I think, 30 hours in the game, because just running around and exploring is one of the most enjoyable things that you'll ever encounter. Once you're in the game, there's no loading between zones. You'll load if you fast travel, but otherwise it's seamless to run from one side of the map to the other. And that is tens of kilometers of in-game travel. It is stunningly beautiful. I'm playing on an Xbox One X on a 4K TV. I've got a 65-inch LG OLED HDR 4K TV, aka
all of the acronyms.
Dog's balls.
AKA what? Sorry, I didn't get that.
The dog's balls. It's the dog's dangles. Okay. It's amazing. And the game just is gorgeous. And the amount of times I've just stopped and just kind of enjoyed the scenery from on top of a synchronization point and stuff like that, is beautiful. Just so, like, the fidelity in this game is phenomenal. The physics are a bit Assassin's Creed-y, so sometimes just like a boat will just drop out the sky and you'd be like, what the hell? And you can always pass it off on it's the animus, don't worry about it, it's just the animus,
right.
The
it's all a simulation
segments,
anyway, and sometimes yeah, exactly. Bugs happen.
The future elements outside the animus are terrible, and they've always been bad, and I think Ubisoft has just kind of said, like, oh well, they're always bad, let's not bother with them, rather than trying to make them good.
It's very short, isn't it? Like
exactly, and it kind of feels a waste, almost. Like, I get they're trying to advance that story, but that story hasn't been fun again since Desmond from Assassin's Creed 3, you know, the end of that, not having Desmond anymore in those segments, just for me, they haven't built a character in there, so they're trying to now with Lydia, and you know, again, they haven't given it the best opportunity. It's a small little area to run around and explore. It doesn't feel as good as, you know, you just want to get back into the actual main game.
It feels like it doesn't really matter anyway, like it's such a small part of the entire game, at least from what I've seen so far. But
so then there's the ship combat. Have you done any ship combat yet?
No, I'm about, I don't know, I would say 5, 6, 7 hours in, maybe 6.
Okay.
So I just got to Alexandria.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so have you met Aya?
Yes.
Yes. So
she seems like a really cool character.
She's fantastic. Yeah. And you get to play as her occasionally.
I figured, yeah.
Doing these ship things, which are very much like if you play Black Flag, it's that same combat again, only you're kind of commanding a trireme. And that's fun, but at the same time, the third or fourth time you get asked to do those sort of things, you're like, okay. Mm. I'd rather just kind of run around and explore and go and kill someone over a petty thing.
So overall,
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, I think I spent about 30 hours playing the game. And maybe I'm underestimating how much of that's main quest. But I feel like more often than not, I'm doing a side quest. And it's still enjoyable, but the side quests are very samey as always, in that so-and-so has a problem, I need to travel to the map, infiltrate an area, kill a person, retrieve someone. So it's very often they've captured someone, so I need to go in, open a cage, carry them out, put them on the floor, talk to them, and then ride off and kill someone else. And that's, I'd say, 90% of the quests. There's not a huge amount more you can do with that. I mean, I would have liked...
So what have you been doing for 30 hours then? Certainly you've enjoyed the game,
running around, exactly. I've enjoyed it, and the puzzles aren't that puzzling. There's basically, you'll get to sort of almost like a detective mode, where you'll go into an area, and then you'll just basically have to find highlighted objects, interact with them, and then once you found all of them, Bayek will be like, oh, I see, there was a struggle here and this person there and they ran off this way. In fact, let's go over that way. Cool new mechanics. You've got Senyu, who's your eagle, so you can take control of your eagle and fly around and mark targets, and you basically use it like a drone. So you would kind of go to an encampment, control your eagle, tag all of the guards so you knew where they were, and then you could, they're highlighted and you can follow their movements. And then you go back to Bayek and use that information there to kind of take out the encampment. So it's fun, but it's the same fun again and again and again and again, which does diminish some of the fun you have. Mm. There's a lot of craftable armor upgrades, which are just basically, again, go and kill a load of wild animals, go and kill a guy carrying some copper. Once you've killed enough of those guys, you can use that to instantly craft up stuff. You don't have to buy items really, although there are shops in the game. I never found the need to buy an item. I always had, discovered or looted an item. The skill point tree is kind of quite of a web, and you can choose if you want to go more into melee or into range or into utility. Eventually you just kind of get everything.
I can't tell if you like the game.
Well, the thing is, I do and I don't. I think it's, like I said, I think it's the best Assassin's Creed since Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I think it's a really solid game. It's stunningly beautiful. Like, honestly, just phenomenal quality.
On your Xbox One X on a 4K HDR,
exactly.
TV,
but that's the thing, so it's in 4K HDR, and it is a different world that I'm blown away by. All in all, like I said, I think I've enjoyed the time I spent playing it, but it's far, far from the level of enjoyment I think you get from something like Odyssey. It's a different kind of game, a different kind of enjoyment, but like I said, a huge, huge number of flaws, yet in and of itself, it's still a great experience.
I think so. I spent a few hours with it, as I said. And initially, I was a little bit disappointed that it was just another Assassin's Creed, kind of. But I've been very surprised that they've improved so many things that it you can't really put your finger on it, but everything feels better. The combat is, I mean, for, I'm going to use a shorthand, and yes, it is a little bit Dark Souls-y, very, just a little bit. I mean, obviously not in the difficulty, but in the way it controls maybe Dark Souls or Monster Hunter, in that if you use a heavy weapon, it's going to take a certain amount of time to bash someone with it, and they might swing around, and if you miss, then you're going to be vulnerable for a little bit of time, that kind of thing. The Senyu mechanic, the eagle or the falcon, I suppose, is amazing, because one thing that isn't really clear when you look at it or when it's described is that you can go to Senu anytime, like literally anytime. It's used to mark your targets a lot of the time, but it's also used to explore the environment. You can travel anywhere with Senu. There's a handy GPS feature where you you get on your mount, either a camel or a horse, and you go somewhere automatically, and it just drives. It's basically a level 5 autonomous camel, and it just gets you there. And at the same time, you can go to Senu, and you can look at yourself from above. You can go somewhere else. Like, you're traveling, it takes a little bit of time if you have to go somewhere far away and you don't have the fast travel point unlocked yet. You send yourself there, and then you go explore with Senu in other places. And the map is enormous. Like, it is massive. It's surprisingly large. And yes, there are some wide areas of just desert or oasis or water, but it's not completely empty. There are still things to do there. And still, like, the little villages, the towns are significantly bigger than what you would expect. And so you go explore. I went to the pyramids of Giza at some point just with Senu, and I was looking around, and it's just... as you said, it's. I mean, I'm playing on PS4, not a PS4 Pro, so it's not 4K, not a super powerful machine. It's still pretty good looking, but the surprising thing is the view distance. You can see so far away, and it gives you a sense of scale that is, I think, pretty unique in the video gaming world. Like, I can't remember any other, because Egypt on that. In that part is pretty flat, right? And so you're in the delta of the Nile, and you have you can see really far away, and it's it gives you a feeling that you don't usually get in video games, especially since you can go to Senu at any point. Like, it justifies that part of the exploration of the game. So everything feels better. It is I haven't played many of the Assassin's Creed games. I've played, I think, two for a little bit, and I've completed Unity a few years back. So I'm not a big fan of Assassin's Creed in general, but this one is, it's not like I'm blown away either. It feels like a good game, a solid Assassin's Creed, and the enjoyment of Egypt is definitely there. It's not the most incredible game I've ever played, but I think it's a solid solid experience. I think
it's
more or
worth
less
the
on
cost,
the same.
Definitely, exactly. Yeah. I think it's a huge amount of content, albeit a lot of that's the same. But just for sheer kind of travelism of just exploring a world that is, like, super deep. And there are some cool things. So they have these things called hidden papyrus. So you'll find a papyrus, and on there it will have a riddle, and that will then, if you solve the riddle and find the item, you get rewarded with a weapon. And it's quite cool in that it'll be like, you know, atop the smallest of the three pyramids in Giza, look for the two mushroom-shaped rocks. I lie atop the smaller one, gathering moss.
Yeah, it's a little bit more mysterious than this.
Yeah. Kind of.
Okay, maybe not.
So then you go there, you look, you're like, oh yeah, those rocks look like mushrooms. You go over there, climb at the big one, jump on the small one, and there's a sparkly thing on the ground. You grab it, and now you've got an item. And so there's stuff like that kind of encourages you to go around.
The crafting Sphinx system, I think, works. It's not too taxing. It's just what you...
It's just, to me, it just feels... Like, I mean, I very quickly leveled up my health, and that then made the game trivial, I think. And I think there were certain things that didn't really matter about upgrading, and other things that were like, yeah, you should definitely upgrade. Wood is, you know, not attainable in the world. Like, you can only get it from people and objects and stuff. I want to be able to go out and hack away at a tree.
Yeah, I was hacking at a tree for a long while before I understood that.
Exactly.
That wasn't
going to
get me.
And it's cool to go kill some lions and leopards and get their skins. But ultimately, once you unlock the perk where you loot on melee, it then just becomes so quick. So all I do in Assassin's Creed is I stay on my horse the whole time. Combat is enhanced by the speed and momentum you have. So you just run at something full pace on your horse, swing your sword, and you'll take him out.
So that seems like a design issue.
Maybe, exactly. And it depends. Like, you know, I could play differently, but I just want to cheese it ultimately. So there's other stuff I haven't explored. There's in the Sphinx, there's a map in the base of it. And apparently there's stone circles around the world. I don't know what happens if you complete all of those stone circles, if there's more stuff there. The kind of forerunner type story isn't really there from what I've encountered. Like you see a bit of it in the base of one of the pyramids in Giza, but past that, it's still very much more about taking down the order. And a lot of the order you take out quite quickly and easily as well. It didn't feel too menacing ever.
I was going to ask something, but maybe that's a little bit of a spoiler, so maybe I won't. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's a good game, solid game, lots of qualities, and the biggest feature is Egypt, I would say, and the exploration.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's something that is definitely valuable as a a feature for a game. It's not something that you say, oh, it's on the side, and it's like, it's so well done that, I mean, getting in Alexandria was an experience, and it feels...
The cities are gorgeous.
It feels like, even more than other Assassin's Creed games, it feels like an experience that you can only have in a video game, and an experience that the virtual reconstruction of something that didn't exist before, you know, and we're all very much looking forward to that education mode they're going to be putting out in early 2018. I hope it's good, and given the interest that we have in that in the base game already, I think it's going to be. All right, let's move on. Very quickly, I do want to mention Wolfenstein 2, which I didn't get a chance to get to. You didn't either.
No.
And it's getting really good reviews. I want to finish the first one, which I never completed, before I jump into it.
You need to, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a phenomenal experience. The Wolfenstein I always describe as the best HBO special you can play. in that it's got everything you would expect from a fantastic HBO special. You know, it's got the violence, the sex, the intrigue, the twist, the drama and shock and everything. It's a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Really loved it.
Definitely a good one. And go past the first mission. Like, the first mission in the first one is kind of... It doesn't represent what happens afterwards. So,
no.
And there is
also
a lot
a
of
space
spoilers
level,
to be had,
which is really, really, really well done. Often in space levels, they're a bit. This does a really, really good space level.
Definitely.
In the first Wolfenstein.
And there's a lot of spoilers apparently in the second one. So I hope I can stay away from them until I play it. And it's apparently an excellent game, so we'll get back to it once we have had a chance to play it. And there's DLC coming where you don't play BJ Blazkowicz, which is probably a good thing, because we've had a lot of Blazkowicz in our lives until now, and that's good, but we want to see others as well.
I enjoyed BJ. I thought he was good. Not also, and I obviously enjoy BJ, yeah, I don't know. I like playing as him. He's fun. But we'll see.
I agree.
I'm open to new experiences.
Star Wars Battlefront 2
yes.
is a new experience that you might be interested in having. But the early... So the reviews aren't out yet. The game itself is coming out tomorrow, I believe. But the fears are apparently were justified, and it is riddled with loot boxes that are required in order to... Basically, there's a lot of pay to win in the game. And I've addressed this, I believe, a few weeks ago when we were talking about loot boxes. And my point was, for the games that I've played that were sort of cause for worry, namely Shadow of War and Destiny 2, I haven't had a problem with the loot boxes. And I think the fears were very much exaggerated, and the outrage was exaggerated because the loot boxes were absolutely not necessary and did not have a big impact on the game.
100% agree with you on that.
Okay, thank you. Here, it seems like it is very much justified. There is some chicanery happening. Is that the word I'm trying to find? Chicanery? Like some not very kosher stuff happening with...
Maybe chicanery.
So, for example, apparently the review copies of the game had required less credits to unlock characters than the final version, than the retail version did. So the journalists are not having the proper experience. There was a comment on Reddit where someone was complaining that they would have to unlock Darth Vader to play him. And EA's team responded, and they got the most downvoted comment in the history of Reddit. That says something. Overall, my impression now, I'm going to have to wait and see the reviews and see how it works exactly. And they're saying they're going to adjust the prices of heroes, but it seems like first of all, super slimy way of handling it. Second of all, I was saying a few weeks ago, let's wait, let's save our outrage until we actually have an example of something that is deserving of that outrage, that is actually pushing the boundaries of the way loot boxes and pay-to-win work so far that it would be unacceptable. I think we found our candidate. We're still waiting to see the reviews.
Exactly. Wait and see. I think aesthetically, the game looks gorgeous. Gameplay-wise, I think it's pretty solid. What it comes down to is to play those super powerful characters. It requires a lot of currency.
Well, it's not just the characters. It's also like you can improve your abilities in the game. Like you can lock on enemies more quickly in the dogfights. You can get basically they're now level locked behind levels, but you get to those levels so fast that you don't have the time to acquire enough credits to buy those perks anyway. So it comes down to whether or not you've put down enough money on the loot boxes
on the game itself.
On the game, and ultimately, it's going to level out. You're going to get, you know, let's say a few weeks from now, everyone's going to be max level. Maybe they're going to have acquired enough credits to play at the same level as those that would have paid.
Yeah, there is another issue, though, with credits in that currently you get less credits for winning a game quickly than winning a game taking ages. So
that's going to be a problem.
So it's one of those things where on one hand, I can understand they're thinking like, okay, well, you know, you only play for 5 minutes, so you shouldn't get as much.
Maybe you were playing
against, kind of a lesser skilled opponents and things like that. But equally, it doesn't encourage you to win quickly. You kind of want to win, but drag it out. I think it's disproportionately more if you win after some time has passed.
If the balance isn't right there, it can be a problem.
Exactly. I think with all these things, it really comes down to, you know, what are loot boxes? And in many cases, they are a way for computer developers to make revenue throughout the lifetime of a game rather than just at launch. And some people get it better than others in terms of how right it goes. And we'll just have to see. I've not yet experienced the game, nor its loot boxes and stuff like that. So I can't speak about it. But I don't know. I still give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, loot boxes, I mean, obviously we're big fans of Blizzard, and they've been using loot boxes in recent months and years. I think there are, you know, many different cases. If it's in a free-to-play game, it's kind of, all right, that's fair, you know, whatever. It's free-to-play, so even if you're not happy about it, they're going to have to make some money. If it's only cosmetic items, then also it's probably something that you have to live with. In the case of, and it's also, if it's a single player game, usually it's handled correctly. It's okay. In the case of a game you're going to have to pay for, that is also including loot boxes that give you gameplay elements, and it also changes the way the multiplayer works, then there is definitely cause for concern, and the balance has to be very, very carefully created. In this case, we're going to wait for the reviews, but it seems they're pushing it, and it seems they are banking on the popularity of the Star Wars franchise to do things that would otherwise be unacceptable. I mean, it seems they're unacceptable, if I'm being honest. I'm not going to buy the game. I would encourage people to not buy the game until this has been clarified, because if you remember, again, when we first heard about it, I was like, all right, let's wait for a little bit. The game is in beta. They're going to address it. Let's see what actually happens. Now we're a day away from the release, and unless they change the things in the amounts of credits you need or the amount of credits you get for playing it, what we're seeing here is not just slightly out of balance, it's outrageously out of balance, meaning that if you want to not be crushed by those who spend money, you also have to spend money. Like, playing for a very long time is not really going to help you, because the amount of time is outrageous.
I kind of feel that if the game were free, the loot boxes wouldn't be as bad. But to have that on top of a premium-priced AAA title is just that much. It's just too much. There's lots of free-to-play games out there that have, you know, time accelerants in and stuff like that, and it's quite accepted. Like, you know, you get stims and boosts and stuff that allow you to gather gold quicker, get more XP, all these sorts of things, or just buy currency, and that's fine, because it's like you can either play the game for a long time, or you can, you know, buy stuff and just enjoy the time you have to play. That in expensive products, though, just hasn't really been done properly yet, and it's still quite resisted. So I think this is one of the things where, genuinely, if people don't like this sort of, you know, practice, they shouldn't buy the game, because that is how they will measure success on this or not. Like, how well did it go? Yeah, we got a lot of pushback, but we made record sales, so actually go for it. Just become the norm.
There are a couple of things here. First, I think it is possible to do correctly. I think if, you know, you get enough credits to get a loot box in a short enough amount of time, when you're playing the game, you know, when it's your game and you enjoy playing it a lot, I think it can work, even if it is in a game that you have to pay initially, because the stated goal of EA with this is to not have anyone pay for, you know, DLCs and stuff like that. I think there is a balance to be found, even for a game that has loot boxes in multiplayer that affect gameplay. You know, yes, it's hard, but I think there would be a balance that could be found. This definitely is not that. The benefit of not having to pay for DLC is completely negated by the fact that it takes so long to get enough credits, and that people who pay for stuff are just going to crush you in multiplayer. So, all right, we'll wait for the reviews to come out, but it seems to me that EA has been pushing it too far. They're doing a money grab for a license that they know the IP is going to be attractive to a lot of people. I think it's a hazardous bet that they're doing, because it's a short-term gain for long-term brand damage that is going to do them a disservice over the next few months and years. And by the way, they're doing it in Need for Speed Payback as well, but the difference is Need for Speed Payback doesn't seem to be a very good game, so no one cares. But overall, not very happy with this, and if those numbers are confirmed tomorrow when the game launches, and the team behind it don't adjust them severely, this is going to be a blemish. It's already a blemish. on EA's. And you know, it's kind of like, again, EA, they are already the corporate overlord of the video gaming world, even more, if that's possible, than Activision. And they are, you know, regarded as the evil evil corporation.
Yeah, that, it's a DICE game, but EA's just spent $400 million buying, what are they called?
The Titanfall Respawn.
Yeah, Respawn. So it's not like EA's super hard up for cash. But I get the thoughts behind it. It's just poorly executed so far. So we'll see if they decide to amend it. I don't think they will. I think they will put out a public sort of like, yeah, sorry for this. You know, we still believe the game stands up and is a very enjoyable experience. And then maybe like a sort of a discount code or something like, you know, hey, here you go. Go go buy some loot crates a bit cheaper and
maybe
hush your mouths. And yeah,
I think it's gonna be unless they masterfully PR the shit out of this story, I think it's gonna derail into something that that is going to affect them. I'm sure they're going to be making lots of money with the game and possibly with the loot boxes, although the people who are going to be playing the game because it's Star Wars, I'm not sure they're going to be spending a lot of money on loot boxes, but maybe the people who are quote-unquote real gamers, I don't think they're going to be possibly buying the game and certainly not buying loot boxes. I think this is a headache that they are going to have to solve, and even if they don't solve it, it's going to have you know, it's going to create issues for them for the next few months. All right. And I'm not buying a game. I don't think you should buy it either.
I'm getting given one, so...
Whoops. Well, that's isn't that nice, being a famous YouTuber?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know, Patrick. You know, I'm they've asked me to create a video on it. They're going to pay me. So I probably will. I will be honest, as always, so we'll see if it goes out.
I'm looking forward to watching that that video once it is actually produced.
Full disclosure, this was paid and it's the greatest game ever. I love the loot boxes. There you go.
All right, so Paris Games Week, Sony conference, though that was a couple of weeks ago, so we're not going to go into every little tiny detail, but there was a lot of games announced. Guacamelee 2, Spelunky 2, LocoRoco 2, those are on the somewhat indie side. There's PlayStation VR games, Farpoint, Sprint Vector. Basically, they're going not super strong on the PlayStation VR, but it's kind of made me want to plug it back in, basically set aside 30 minutes to figure out how it gets plugged in, and then so I can play 30 minutes of the PSVR. I joke, but I think, you know, they're still pushing it enough that they're not abandoning it, if that makes sense. And then a bunch of bigger games. Ghost of Tsushima, the new game from Sucker Punch, developers of Infamous. We only had a small cinematic type thing, but it's the setting is very attractive. It's a samurai game, samurai slash ninja, during the invasion of the Tsushima Island by the Mongols, which is a I mean, the trailer was really good. More Spider-Man, where we saw the narrative aspect of it. Detroit Become Human, with yet another little vignette of the game, which is a different character altogether, but there's some child abuse going there and very gripping moments. God of War gameplay, just a little bit. And then finally, that there's a bunch of other things. I'm sure you can mention the ones you liked. But finally, that The Last of Us trailer cinematic, which was incredibly violent and kind of... Well, I'll let you say what you thought of the whole thing and what games you
So God of War is the only one that really kind of made me like, oh man, I need to play that now. Just because I really enjoyed those games, and I'm looking forward to that chapter, really, of kind of Dad Kratos.
It's kind of like, okay, I've seen what it is. Just, it's coming out in 2018, I think, early 2018.
Yeah.
Just don't show me anymore. Just
Yeah, I think I'm sold. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't know how many people aren't. So, you know, I guess they want to keep going with that. Sure. Last of Us. It was cool, but I don't know. It didn't feel like it was. I don't know. It felt a bit shock more than anything else. But
yeah, the way I've heard it described is that it's extremely violent, and it's not earned violence. In the game, whenever in the first game, when there's violence, it feels like it's justified. Here, it was just kind of, here's this shocking thing. You don't know any of the characters, and there you go.
Yeah, so I think that's just going to be the trailer. I don't think they can mess up the game, because they just literally just have to make the same game again with. Yeah, I'll just have the same game again.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, just before we move off that Last of Us trailer, I personally really liked it. And I love the fact that apparently Ellie's mom, it seems like it's her mom, she is so badass. I really like that she looked buff. You know, she looked like
Sarah Connor.
Even more, like, almost like, I don't know, she's some kind of wrestler, or I don't know, she looks like she doesn't take crap from anyone. But it gave me a look inside the violence of that new chapter, not just the violence, but even like the different characters and the different factions, which intrigued me. But I understand the criticism that it didn't feel earned on the violence part. I'm such a big fan. I kind of fell into it anyway. But so that was The Last of Us for me. Anything else that caught your eye?
Spelunky 2 looked cool. But that's about it. Really?
Yeah.
That kind of stands out in my head, at least. It was a
while
ago.
As I said, the Ghost of Tsushima kind of
resonated with me. Yeah, I guess, it looks cool. Anything with Mongols, you know.
And samurais. Two of the best things, you know? Samurais and Mongols.
Yeah.
Spider-Man. I mean, I have high hopes for that game.
I've just been hurt so many times with Spider-Man games. Like, Maybe it's going to be good. Maybe we have the technology now to make a proper web slinger game.
Well, do you like the Batman games?
Yes, I think the Batman games are very good.
So there you go.
Well,
you're going to like the Spider-Man game. It's essentially the same system.
We'll see if I feel like Spider-Man.
Okay.
I don't want to be Batman in a Spider-Man costume. I want to feel like Spider-Man. Spider-Man's got. Yeah, that's the problem. Spider-Man's like super overpowered, like has ridiculous resistance, strength, agility. You've got spider sense, and that how does that translate into a game is always a bit. The actual act of traveling around and shooting webs and swinging around, the feeling of speed and weight, and I think speed is probably going to be the thing, combining that with controllability and how easy is it to. So I don't know. It's one of those games I'll need to play, and we'll see.
Okay. I'm very excited for it myself. They also mentioned that they're not going to have a big announcement at the PlayStation Experience, which is happening in a couple of weeks. I think December 9th, so almost a month, actually. And that was interesting, because it did feel like the Paris Games Week conference was like, wait, they showed a lot of stuff. What? Why was that? Lots of games, and of course, the explanation probably is they wanted to keep the focus on Sony when the Xbox One X was going to be released only a few days later. So that was pretty well played, I would say, by Sony. But yeah, there you go. All of the announcements from PlayStation Experience were blown at the Paris Games Week conference, where we might get some dates. I mean, Spider-Man and God of War are due for dates, so hopefully we'll get that, and maybe a few more details on Ghost of Tsushima. And Sony is also, I mean, the PlayStation 4 is also still selling really well. Their forecast has been increased to 19 million for the year, up from 18, and they should have 79 million consoles installed by the end of the year, we're currently at 67. For reference,
it's not bad, is it?
Not bad. It took the PlayStation 3 7 years to get to 80 million. So that's a good performance by Sony.
I mean, the
PlayStation
3
started a little bit slower.
This round, hasn't it? Yeah. This thing. PlayStation 3 suffered against the 360, but this time the role's been reversed. We'll have to see, obviously, how it carries on against the 1X. But, you know,
well, so the 1X. The Pro, yeah, let's talk about that. The One X is available now. Oh, and by the way, Microsoft has stopped manufacturing the Kinect. So pour one out for the two ahead of its time Kinect, which still lives on in our iPhone XS and Amazon Alexa smart.
Yeah, exactly. They had some of the ideas, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so the Xbox One X is available now. I think you did, talking about paid promotions, you did a thing with Microsoft, didn't you?
So yeah, so I got given one.
Excellent.
And I was there for the Xbox launch in the UK, where I played Shadow of War on it. And so yeah, I had a 1S, and going from a 1S to a 1X, externally, I went from a white console to a black console, but otherwise they look identical. Yeah. But the X,
which is quite it's quite a feat of engineering.
Yeah,
I think we mentioned it, but it's tiny. It doesn't have the external power brick that
enormous
that I hated.
With a figure eight cable. The thing is, it is heavy. And it is an extra kilogram heavier than the S. Mm. And pick it up and you're like, whoa, hello. It's dense.
Well, that's what you pay for. It's $500.
Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if they put lead in it or something like that to make it feel like, oh yeah, this, I see why it's so expensive now.
Yeah.
It's an impressive console in terms of the gaming quality. I hate the UI. I don't like the UI.
That's still
update.
The same, right?
Well, it's the same as the last Xbox update. Right. Which was, I don't know, what was that, a few months ago?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't like it. I feel like to get to my games requires more button presses than it should. To play the game I'm playing, you know, literally, this is the lovely thing about consoles now, is, you know, I turn it on with the controller, and then I press A, and then I'm in the game where I was when I turned it off the day before. And that's amazing, like within seconds to be back in.
Which I think is going to be one of the strong points of the X for people who want a PC-like quality experience. I mean, obviously, for me, I don't have a 4K TV. I probably am not interested in that console.
Exactly.
But
it's faster loading times and stuff like that. But honestly, the value, you feel, you appreciate it if you have a 4K TV.
Right.
With HDR as well. Like, the quality is just a country mile different. And it does improve the quality of all games, but if they've had that HDR pack, which is a big old download, you know, it's a lot of data to up all the fidelity, the resolution, and all the rest.
Yeah, I think most games are around like 100 gigs or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so you get a terabyte drive in there. It's not that many installs.
Mm.
But yeah, it's gorgeous. Like, the gameplay on it is beautiful, stunning. Just, it truly is.
So to
but
give
the
you
UI,
an idea,
I think, is just terrible.
To give you an idea, Digital Foundry made a test of, I think, Wolfenstein 2 running on the X and running on a high-end PC at 4K, HDR, all of that. And essentially, I'm going to summarize, but essentially, they don't see a lot of differences between the two, which is not going to mean a lot.
Considering one costs £500,
exactly,
and the other one costs like £1,500.
Exactly, yeah,
you know,
that's the point.
It's a phenomenal quality and value for money. And, I mean, my Shadow of War I got on Xbox is also then playable on my PC. You know, they share, I didn't have to buy it twice. I get it, and I can play it on my Windows PC when I'm at work, cloud save, get back home, and it syncs, and I'm carrying on my Xbox. Mm. It's a fantastic experience when it works like that, because you feel like you've got a huge amount of value for money. It's very flexible. It works around me, and it feels like my games are where I am, without it being kind of like a Nvidia Shield or PlayStation Go. You know, it's It's that PlayStation lovely,
Now, yeah.
Now even, sorry. It's that lovely tween.
So I think, so it's not a console for everyone. I think for people who want something really powerful and the ease of use of a console, it's definitely something to consider. It is more expensive than the 1S and the PlayStation 4. And the other big issue is that it is the lack of exclusive games. I mean, that's what we've been saying for a while. Microsoft has no exclusive games anymore. I mean, you can mention Forza and Halo and Gears of War.
Tomb Raider, stuff like
that. Yeah, well, I guess Tomb Raider. But the latest one came out for... wait, am I saying... Am I mistaken? Didn't the
Rise of the Tomb Raider came out on PC, I think.
Yeah, but on PS4.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was just windowed. They're all windowed exclusives.
Yeah,
so exactly. They don't have anything that's only... Except, I guess, Halo.
Yeah, Halo and Gears of War. And the thing is...
But I think those are also then playable on PC because of Microsoft. Yeah. So,
but Phil Spencer, that has been promoted at Microsoft, and he's basically been saying, hey, we're going to be buying dev studios and we're going to be creating exclusive games, which is great, but... how long is that going to take? So, I mean, for me, it's still PlayStation 4 because of the exclusive games. If the Switch has proven anything, it's that the games are going to make your platform. So I'm glad that Microsoft has managed. It seems to me like Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, was not really interested in the Xbox and so was leaving it to its own devices. And now Phil Spencer has managed to get high enough in the hierarchy that he can influence those decisions. So I'm looking forward to see what's going to happen for the Xbox brand in the next, 18 to 24 months. The Xbox One X is certainly a great device for the people who want to play games that aren't exclusive to other platforms on a quote-unquote cheap, super powerful PC, kind of. And it seems like it's selling pretty well. I suspect,
however,
it's an
HDR Blu-ray player as well. So yeah, it's one of the cheapest HDR Blu-ray players you can get, as well as also having everything else. Obviously, you can watch Netflix and Amazon Prime through it, YouTube. Yeah. You can use it as a smart TV, but truly, to get the value for it, you probably already have a TV with all those things integrated anyway, bar the Blu-ray. And it does. It is fantastic if you have the accompanying kit. Yeah. And that's what's going to make it trickier. Obviously, if you're buying an Xbox now, you might as well buy the X. If you already have a 1S or even a 1, upgrading to the X without having the TV, I can't imagine many people doing it.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting device. Not for everyone, obviously. I think it's going to be very popular with some of the Xbox fan base. It's not going to bring in many people from the other camps, kind of. But I don't think that's what they were expecting with it anyway. I don't think anyone at Microsoft is thinking, hey, we're going to get people who
Sony's going to pack up shop after this exactly. one, boys. Yeah.
But it is, I mean, things are looking... the way I look at all of this is, I think Microsoft is on the right path for, 2 years down the line.
Redemption.
For me.
Yeah. I think exactly. I think they've got the hubris of being the leading console to then suffering. A lot of what made the 360 great, it wasn't technically better than a PS3. It was just that it was a better experience and had the games.
Yeah.
And Sony learned from that. And then when the PS4 came out, they managed to secure enough good exclusives on top of having a solid console performance to beat out the Xbox One, which was a bit lackluster. It's a huge, huge console, and had the Kinect, both, had to
all
get
of that,
and
the DRM issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, nowadays, imagine Microsoft had their way when they first announced the Xbox One. We might have been able to sell the games that we buy digitally. Now, because of the nerd outrage, and that's why I'm so careful with nerd rage, right? when player bases get outraged about something and start hammering it over the head without taking the time to understand the details. And that's why I was so careful with the loot boxes a few weeks ago. The what Microsoft was proposing back then had positive sides and negative sides, but the positive sides were really good, and we'll never get them now because it's the you know, the time has passed. Things, I mean, maybe we will down the line. Maybe
I think the precedent's been set where people are like, oh, don't do that. People get really annoyed about that.
And now it's happening. More and more people are buying their games digitally, and you can't lend them. You can't sell them. You can't do anything with them. So anyway, I didn't mean to go back down into that controversy, but yeah, Xbox One X, good machine for those who want it. And PUBG is coming to Xbox One. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Last thing, Microsoft apparently has plans to launch a game streaming service. So just like the, you know, PlayStation Now and stuff like that, it might happen that we don't have any other consoles after the, I think we're going to get another generation, probably around 2020 or so. PS4, Xbox 2, Xbox 1000.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, then you think we'll go cloud.
Well, the thing is, the diminishing returns on bandwidth are important, meaning once the bandwidth is good enough to accommodate 1080p or 4K, and we will get there, video with enough, with a small enough latency, lag and latency, then once you can do that, you can increase the power of the console on the other hand, on the other end, exponentially, and it doesn't require a bigger connection. You just have the video quality that you would expect. So I think it might be something that gets that becomes more possible sometime.
So I was obviously a huge fan of OnLive. I got to work on that a bit when it came over to the UK, and I played through the entirety of Arkham City on an iPad with a Bluetooth controller, and it was phenomenal, and I loved it. And for me, in those situations with the circumstance, I had great internet, I had no problems, it was a magical experience. The realities of broadband at the time for a lot of people is they couldn't do that. And then more so, it was the games publishers and iTunes and Apple who all wanted a cut of that revenue through the subscription service and buying games through the platform that just meant there was no margin. It just couldn't work.
Right.
Then obviously PlayStation bought Gaikai, which was a similar streaming service, but wasn't as robust and didn't really work all that well. And then they turned that into PlayStation Now. But then they bought OnLive, got all of those patents and stuff, and PlayStation Now became fantastic with what it could do. As it stands at the moment, there's a new company. Well, there's a few new companies, but there's one called Polystream, which they are going more down the route of kind of MMOs and big games that want to do trials and demos, where they are allowing cloud apps. So you can be streaming it on Twitch and then your audience can click a button and then they can play through a web browser interface through the game instantly, straight away. So for the big MMOs out there that are, you know, 80 gig downloads, it can turn into just an instant stream. So they don't have to worry about the barrier to entry and stuff like that. So there is still kind of R&D going into that space.
There's
so
actually a company, a French company called Shadow that does that, basically gives you your own Windows instance and you can install whatever you want, and it works pretty well if you have the connection.
And think of it in terms of, you know, kind of phoning up your ISP and being like, yeah, I want a Titan XP now in terms of graphics card, please, thank you. Okay, what's that, £10 extra a month? Okay, cool, yep, thank you. You know, boom, instantly upgrade your setup, all on the cloud, all scalable. It certainly feels like it's the future, and all of the stuff we've had so far works. It just doesn't work every time, like having physical products in your hand tends to. So as the quality and, you know, bandwidth and all that increases down the line, I completely agree. I can only see it as the future, and getting to that point where then any device that can get Wi-Fi is a high-end gaming device, becomes, you know, complete game changer for everything. So, cannot wait.
Yeah, so it's not surprising Microsoft is looking at this again. They did say they looked at it before it was too expensive and the infrastructure wasn't ready. But you have to imagine that within, 8 years or so, it would be something possible. So, So PlayerUnknown's Battleground is coming to Xbox One in December, which we kind of knew already in the preview program. There's another aspect to PUBG, though. It's going to be released, quote unquote, on PC by the end of the year, meaning it will reach 1.0 available status, which is a really interesting press slash sales slash developer slash publisher dynamic, because very clearly this is a way for Bluehole, the publisher for PUBG, to be able to say the game has been released in 2017, and so it is eligible for the Game of the Year awards, which they want.
Maybe.
I'm certain of it. Because imagine it gets released early 2018. The hype has passed. It gets released in February or March. It's done.
I just don't think it's that big a deal for them. Like they've got a game that is the highest concurrency on PC ever. This is a game that was made out of Unity assets. This is going onto the Unity asset store, pulling a load of stuff together and kind of jury-rigging something that somehow struck gold. It was a phenomenal.
Yeah, they sold 30 million, I think, something like that.
Bottled line, exactly. So I think when you've made your money, you want to get that game out of early access, so then you can start moving on to charging that player base for more stuff down the line. They've got the paid for loot crates, but they could do map packs or other stuff. There'd be further ways to monetize that audience, and that I think would be the bigger push of getting out of early access.
The thing is, they're going to be getting it out by the end of December. You don't push for a release at the end, in the holiday season. You don't push for a release like at the end of the month of December if you're not looking for... I really think so. They could, they could easily... Yes, I'm sure they're eager to be pushing more, sales to their existing audience. But they could do that in January or February. It's not going to change a lot if it's a month later. So, that's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I know it's giving a big headache to many websites and magazines, because they're like, all right, so our Game of the Year discussions are going to be done by mid-December. Do we assume PUBG will be out, or do we give it something, because it's going to get tons of Game of the Year awards, but do we give them conditionally because it was just in preview before in early access, and if it actually ends up being released, then it gets a Game of the Year award?
Like, look, if it's if it's worthy of winning now and it's quote unquote early access, give it the award. It doesn't matter what the tag is on it. It's one of those things of like, oh, it's not that good. We're not going to give it Game of the Year, and it's not out. So that's fine. We expect there to be further development to it. But I think if people want to give it the award, they'll give it the award. Either way.
I agree. The problem is it becomes a thing of principle. You don't give an award to a game that is in early access because you don't know how it's kind of giving an award on a preview or on a review copy that you got as press. It's difficult because then you don't know how it's actually going to perform once it's released. So for PUBG, it's probably not going to change all that much. So people can have a pretty accurate idea of what the game is and how it's going to perform anyway. But it's kind of a principle thing where you don't do that because it's not 100% accurate. But yeah, in the case of PUBG, it's probably safe to judge it on the state it is in now. But it's still a headache for people. They've also announced they're going to be doing an MMO. That's Bluehole, an over-the-top steampunk MMO, according to Polygon. So I don't know what that's going to be like, but I don't know. It's the kind of thing where that game probably would not have gotten half the press it's getting if it wasn't if it wasn't by Bluehole that made.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Bluehole's done MMOs before. Mm-hmm. That's actually what they're kind of more known for. But, you know, PlayerUnknown is just something they kind of picked up. So I don't think, I think this is, you know, less shocking in that this is actually what they do.
It's what they do.
So,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Oh, and Warface, the Crytek game, is going to have a Battle Royale mode. Hey, Call of Duty World War II is out as well. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like it. It's an easy game not to like, but it's also apparently Call of Duty, and it's a better Call of Duty than maybe the last couple. One of the reviewers I really enjoy, or YouTubers, SkillUp from Australia, I believe, is basically saying it's easy to hate. But honestly, when you look at the single-player experience, which that's what most people buy it for, it's people who just buy two or three games a year, it's over the top. It's got set-piece moments that are incredible, and it's Call of Duty, and it's a pretty good Call of Duty if that's what you're looking for.
Super cinematic. The gameplay is pretty good. Weapon balance isn't 100% there, in my experience with it. I found
issues with the multiplayer, with the spawning things where you can randomly spawn in front of someone that's going to keep shooting you and stuff like that.
That's always been Call of Duty's issue with how they tackle
more in
that.
This one, though.
And then there's a lot of animation bugs that are funny. So you'll see a lot of your teammate sat down in a seated position. Like they're driving around like a car just because they can do it right and stuff like that. I think it's a good game. You know, I think it's one of those games that if you like Call of Duty, you'll love this game because I think it's one of the best Call of Duties in a long while.
Are you talking not single player or multiplayer?
Both.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, it is, as with a lot of games, you know, kind of almost like Assassin's Creed, there is a bit of sort of you judge it based on the franchise. So it's like, you know, what have they done different? You don't take it in isolation in terms of what is special about this game. You kind of think like, have they kind of corrected on the previous issues of the franchise? So with Assassin's Creed, it's always been diversity of missions. And no, they haven't. But is it a good game? Yes, it's phenomenal. And I think that, you know, Call of Duty, it's cinematic. When you play it as single player, it is cinematic through and through. It's a blockbuster in every sense. So, you know, will you enjoy it? Yeah. Will you be proud about enjoying it? No, it's not. It's like coming out saying, oh yeah, I was a big fan of the last Transformers film. You know, no one was, but evidently you were. And it still made a ridiculous amount of money. It makes no sense. No one go and see the Knights of the Fallen, whatever it is, the Transform, it's a terrible film. Sorry. Anyway.
Did it make a lot of money?
Yeah, it made a huge amount of money. And it baffles me. I don't know how, because it was a terrible film that made no sense, but like zero sense. It almost like they went in and reshot scenes to make them make less sense. I feel like I had a brain aneurysm watching it. It baffled as to how people could make a film that bad and that much money went into it, and just it's just terrible in every way, in every single way. And yet, you know, and it's really long as well. It's like two and a, anyway. Sorry, this isn't what this show's about. Don't see the film, please.
All right, I didn't, and
it's too late. Most people have.
Won't, yeah. Yeah, EA is shutting down Visceral Games. That's also a story from 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was the studio. First of all, they developed Dead Space, exactly. And they were developing the Star Wars narrative game, basically the Uncharted Star Wars, that Amy Hennig was hired to do. It was surprising because it's a Star Wars game developed by a studio that has a proven record on being at least very competent, if not very talented. And they just shut it down and they're completely rethinking the Star Wars game in what seems to be a somewhat concerning way, because their phrasing is essentially what they're doing is they want to make it a game as a service. They had a long narrative experience, and they're saying they want to do something that is more in line with the current market's expectations for long-term servicing of a game. And I love narrative experiences. It's not like they're completely going away, but there's certainly a sentiment that they're not as profitable as games once were, and the price of games hasn't increased in a long time, and yet the cost of developing games has increased. So the entire industry is moving. That's why we're seeing loot crates and stuff like that, and also because developers like money and publishers like money, obviously. Mm-hmm. Still, it saddens me that a project like Star Wars with Amy Hennig and Visceral Games and EA was marred. There was a lot of excellent reporting done. I think it was Kotaku that did a piece. That studio was troubled, and people were feeling the end for a long time, and they were pulled to help on other games a few times, and the game itself was not very well defined. And so it's not like EA just pulled the plug on a great project that was just months from actually coming out, but still, it saddens me.
Yeah.
Telltale is laying off 20% of their workforce. Mm.
That's like 90 sad. People, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, almost 100. It's really sad, but I do feel for the employees that are losing their jobs. That sucks. But Telltale had to do something about their the way they were doing things. They were churning out games like they got a million different licenses. They were making the same game over and over again with good writing. Well, sometimes good, sometimes average.
Yeah, exactly. An
engine that was in dire need of updating that they didn't update. Basically, it looks like Telltale management took a step back and said, all right, what are we doing, guys? The party is over. Let's rethink how we're moving going forward so that we don't have to do something more drastic maybe in a few years. So, I'd say it's probably something that was coming, and given how they grew in the past few years with the Walking Dead Telltale game, the way it exploded and how they evolved.
Batman and all the other stuff they did. But it was their plan was to license that Telltale story engine, and make more of those adventures. But I think they've just found the saturation point, really.
Yeah. You've mentioned EA has also bought Respawn Entertainment.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ironic. I mean, it's ironic because Vince Zampella and the team used to be at Infinity Ward, which they founded when they left 2015 Inc., which was developing Medal of Honor for EA. So they left EA for Activision, left Activision angry. They left EA angry for Activision. Left Activision angry for EA again, and now they're being purchased by EA. Makes sense. Titanfall was already being published by EA, and Respawn has not known enough success to stay independent, and they're a very talented company. I think they're working on a Star Wars game as well, right? Maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah, I thought they were,
But, makes sense. I worry a little bit for their independence. I mean, clearly they're not going to be independent anymore. And EA has a reputation for putting developer studios, bringing them in the backyard and shooting them in the head. But hopefully that won't happen with Respawn.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it won't. It only happens every time, but this time it'll be different. Yeah.
What else? A couple of weird news items. First, Noctis from Final Fantasy XV is coming to Tekken 7, which the Venn diagram of those the fans of both of those franchises, I feel, outside of Japan is probably 5 people that are very happy right now, but probably not pleasing a lot of people, I would say. And then the Razer phone, to conclude this episode, basically Razer is making a phone which is top of the line, super powerful, like best CPU, GPU, super good camera, super
good RAM, battery life.
8 gigs of RAM, that's ridiculous.
120 frame per second screen. Yeah. They've built it as a gaming phone.
Right.
And so they're trying to make it, you know, what the gamers want. It's got kind of stock Android on it that will get Oreo update in the new year. Yeah, really, really nice looking phone.
So,
it's just one of those things that, you know, are people going to buy it?
Exactly.
You know, do gamers want a gaming phone or do you want a phone?
To bring it back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, you're someone who plays on your phone quite a bit, right?
Yeah,
given your,
all the time.
Your,
yeah.
Family situation. Are you interested in that phone?
I'm going to tinker with one. We're going to get sent one for review and stuff. I'll see what it's like. I don't think so, but I don't know. Currently, I'm on a Pixel. I'm ordering an iPhone 10, so I'll see, you know, if I get it and I think it's nice, maybe I'll try and sell the iPhone 10. I don't know.
I'm
going to go back to iOS.
For the price of an iPhone 10, you could get two Razer phones. It's only
$700.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. It's an affordable phone for what it is. It just comes down to, you know, it's the first iteration. Do you want to get a Gen 1 phone? I've just come off a Pixel. It feels very much like a Generation 1 phone.
Right.
Pixel 2, I'm sure, is, you know, improved on a lot of the gripes that I have with it, but, you know, it's tricky to kind of start in this world.
All right. Well, I guess we'll have to keep an eye on the Yogscast channels.
I don't know where we're going to put it yet.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll see what we get sent and where we think it works. But, yeah.
So that and a Battlefront 2 video will also potentially be coming out there. What else can we find on your YouTube channels and what do you do on the internet?
On the internet. So at the moment, I'm playing a lot of Cave Blazers, which is our game. So we made a game with a developer called Cave Blazers. We just had our big first update. So we introduced local co-op so you can blaze through the caves with a friend. And it genuinely makes the game, you know, infinitely more enjoyable. And there's daily runs in that. So at the moment on my channel, you're going to see me and the developer Will playing the game pretty badly. mainly me, surprisingly, for the next few days. Just busy playing games. We've got our big charity months coming up in December. So getting ready for all of that. It's a huge amount of work, sadly, that gets left to me. But
For charity. It's
for
okay.
Charity, exactly. So that's fine. That's great. It also means, obviously, I don't have to do any of my other work responsibilities because charity means that they are just magically disappeared. So, but anyway, it's certainly a good time to tune in during December. So that's over on Humble Bundle and on Twitch for that. So we've got a big old bundle of games that I've been assembling with. Lots and lots of different games in there, probably around about 65, maybe 70 different items in the bundle. So hopefully huge value for money and all of that going to charity. So excited.
Excellent. All right, cool. Thank you very much. You are the_T on Twitter. So
yep.
I will include this in the show notes and you can go to that Twitter account to find out more. I am Patrick Beja, not Patrick, on Twitter and on Facebook. You can also find this show at frenchspin.com. You can comment over there. You can also leave a review on iTunes if you so wish, just like Spencer HD, which is a fun bloke I spent a little bit of time with at BlizzCon. He says, fun show, great discussion. I just started listening recently, finally taking the time to leave a review. Really enjoyed the educated discussion. Well, obviously, it wasn't this episode he was referring to. And hearing different opinions about games and the gaming industry, music is great. Props to Daniel. Keep up the good work, Spencer. Thank you, Spencer. If you want to leave a review as well, it would help a lot. It helps with visibility on iTunes. So you can do that on iTunes or really on any podcast catalog you use. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another bunch of news and reviews. And until then, I hope you have a wonderful time. Go play Mario. Bye.
Bye.